Decade after decade after decade, most dentists just do not change their methods. Why? Well, why are most dentists content with letting you get repeated cavities? And why are they content with multiple crowns that lead to multiple root canals? This should not be the norm. And that's why the Dr. Shoup Show exists. We're reversing traditional thinking with microscopic methods and advanced biomimetic practices. You're listening to the Dr. Shoup Show, presented by Microscope Dentistry by Shoup. We're online at ddsradio.com. Now, here's Dr. Randy Shoup. I just want to be one. Oh, I could
use a little love sometimes. I just need a thing. Well, hello, everybody. It is great to have you here. Thank you very, very much for deciding to spend an hour with me. This is where you come to become smarter, better educated, more informed. You are going to be a better medical, dental, health, wellness, nutrition, consumer of all those things. We want you to make great decisions that make you healthier as you go through life. And so, if you are a veteran of the program, you know how it works. If you are a rookie, here's what we do. We start in Dental School 101. We walk down a hallway. We turn the corner. We sit in class and we listen to the professor. And today he is going to lecture about something you, the listener, has brought to our attention. I really appreciate it when you do this. One of you out there, great person that you are, has asked me to address the subject of his dentist had told him he has to have a crown on a tooth. My great listener asked, what kind of crown are you going to make? And the dentist said, I'm going to make it out of zirconium. It's the best material. You, the great listener, sent a request into me at ddsradio.com saying, my dentist said, A, I need a crown. B, I need a zirconium crown. Would you please talk about it on the program? I will give you all the information, all the data, everything you need to know about why you should not have a crown, and B, a zirconium crown on your tooth. Ever. I'll tell you all about it. And in Ask the Expert, we know everybody tells us to reduce the amount of red meat that we eat. Don't eat red meat. But why? What does it do? Is it the fat? Is it the grease? Is it bad genes? Why are we not supposed to eat red meat? What is there that when we eat red meat does such terrible things to us? Guess what? I'm going to tell you. And you get to meet my good friend, Janet. Janet and I have known each other a long time. She is really, truly one of the most knowledgeable folks that I have ever known in the dental world. She began her career as a dentist, became a researcher, became a specific bone researcher, and she comes to me for me to be able to provide her dental care. She could go to anybody she wants, but she's going to tell you why it's important to her from a research, from a knowledge, from an academic point of view. She gets the kind of care that she gets at Microscope Dentistry by Shoup. So that's how it works. But you know, first, do you have a needle phobia? Do you hate getting shots? How about if you could get your injections simply by swallowing a pill? Really? I'm going to tell you all about it right now.
Time to go under the microscope.
You just blew my mind.
You know, it's a lot of fun when I am able to stumble across some research and you and I get to talk about it now. And guess what? In a year and a half, 2 years, you and I are going to come across an article that says, new breakthrough in science, never before heard. You say, well, wait a minute. Uncle Randy and I talked about this a year and a half ago. This is one of them that you're going to know about. Log it away. It's going to happen. Scientists actually have designed a capsule. Like a, not a space capsule, but a capsule like a Tylenol capsule or a pill that when taken by mouth can deliver drugs through microneedle injections into your small intestine. After further development of this device, it could serve as an alternative to a number of things that we now just grit our teeth or avoid where they get out the needle and shoot it in your arm or your leg or your behind and give you a shot. Here's what this thing does. It is a little, looks like the propeller of a helicopter, a three-bladed propeller of a helicopter. This little three-bladed helicopter thing gets folded back so that there's only not three blades, but just one blade showing. They slip this into a micro capsule, and you swallow this capsule. The capsule's designed to withstand the rigors of acid through your stomach. It's designed to start to dissolve when it hits the bile secretions in your duodenum or duodenum, however you want to pronounce it. But then when it gets into your small intestine, the most absorptive part of your intestine, the outer capsule disintegrates, and this little helicopter blade, three-bladed blade, unfurls. Now, at the end of each of the blades is a grouping of micro needles. They are teeny, teeny, tiny, and there's usually a grouping of about a dozen of them at the tip end of each of these helicopter blades. They kind of have a little bit of a barb to them. And so as this thing goes tumbling through your small intestine, it gets lodged against the side of your small intestine. These little teeny, teeny, tiny, less than a hair size micro needles get embedded into the wall of the small intestine. And these micro needles are covered with whatever medicine you need. Maybe you need an insulin medication. Maybe you need medication for long-term osteoporosis. Maybe you need a birth control method. Maybe you need drugs that help you with your rheumatoid arthritis or maybe psoriasis. It could even be a chemotherapeutic agent that goes right into the lining of the small intestine. Here's what happens. These little micro needles that are covered with the medication break off and dissolve, releasing their medication into the wall of the small intestine, which is immediately picked up by the bloodstream. Here's the best part. Guess what, kids? There aren't any nerve fibers along the inside of the small intestine. It's completely painless. You don't even know it's happening. After this thing embeds into the wall of the small intestine, it sits there for a while and ultimately just breaks down and just gets excreted out with everything else as it goes through the whole alimentary canal. So you can have the medications that are needed that require injection. See, there's some things that aren't well designed to be absorbed by a pill, just absorbed into the small intestine. There are some things that won't absorb through the skin at all. And so there is a necessity for getting some of these medications into the bloodstream quickly and not having to transfer through things. So these little tiny micro needles actually perforate or puncture into the wall of the small intestine, and they inject their medication. They've done this experimentally. This all comes out of, guess what? MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, in conjunction with the Brigham and Young's Women's Hospital. And it is all supported by the company called Novo Nordisk. Novo Nordisk is a pharmaceutical company, and they're trying to find a new way of delivering drugs and medication that's far more effective and far more compatible to all those folks that absolutely despise and hate needles. It gives a much better delivery system. So if you think this is a good idea and you're always looking for that next stock scoop, Novo Nordisk is on the cutting edge. This is all in experimental phase right now. They've done this. It's called the Lumi, L-U-M-I, because it's named Luminal Unfolding Microneedle Injector. Luminal Unfolding Microneedle Injector, L-U-M-I. It's called the Lumi. Novo Nordisk in conjunction with Brigham and Young's Women's Hospital and MIT is developing all of this, they found that they could deliver a significant amount of insulin into the body through this device. And what it does is you could take these capsules on a regular basis and level out your insulin level so you don't have these peaks and valleys. And so it could allow you to have a much more steady flow of medication. And so vaccines could work. A number of things could work with this technology. So you and I are going to hear about this amazing breakthrough in about 2 years, how Novo Nordisk has got this new injector system, and they're delivering every sort of medication on the planet through this new thing. Guess what, kids? You heard it here first. So, up next, you know, this is from a listener recommendation. You guys are absolutely the best. You send me some of the best ideas. It's my job. It's my fun. It's my pleasure to go do the research. This patient was recommended a zirconium crown. He asked me, is it really the right thing to do? You all know the answer I'm going to say, but I'll tell it again right after this.
You're listening to the Dr. Shoup Show. Exclusive insider info, audio, and video is online now at ddsradio.com.
You are now about to enter.
It's time to enter Dental School 101.
Enter now.
You think this class may be simple, but we go deeper with the knowledge and research every week to teach you and grow you into the best dental consumer you can be. You're listening to the Dr. Shoup Show. We're online at ddsradio.com. Here's Dr. Randy Shoup.
I can only use what I learned from you, and the rest I quietly.
Well, it's great to have you here. Thank you very, very much. And I suppose I should have warned you that this is one of those episodes where you may want to have pencil and paper, but don't despair. You know, you can go to ddsradio.com where we archive all of the programs. And so if you don't have a pencil and paper, if you're out in your car, if you need to write down some of this information, simply at your leisure, get online, go back to ddsradio.com, find the archive of this show, and you will have all of it. You can sit there and take notes. Now, this question has come to me from one of you, my great, wonderful, loyal listeners, and you ask me to address the topic. Your dentist has told you you need a crown on a tooth, and you, being a good listener to the show, didn't take that at face value. You said, well, what kind of crown are you going to make for me? And the dentist said, a zirconium crown. Now, the question then becomes, A, should I have a crown? And B, should it be zirconium? And I'm going to address both of those right now. This is where we get technical. This is where it's important that you are here. I'm glad you're here because you can handle this. Most other audiences can't. Here we go. Zirconium is the most popular material right now on the planet to make crowns out of and caps. You and I have talked at length that it is virtually unnecessary in almost any circumstance. 99.99% of the circumstances, it is totally unnecessary to grind your tooth down to a nub and put a crown on it. I saw this past week, without question, one of the most egregious representations of this, when this patient came to me, has a very, very small cavity on the backside of their tooth, and the dentist had said, this tooth needs to have a crown. It is probably one of the most disgusting and egregious examples of this, and they were going to make a zirconium crown as well. Here's why that is a horrible idea. Number one, it's a horrible idea to cut the tooth down anyway. Number two, it is a doubly horrible idea. And this is why everybody is having so much trouble with their crowns failing, their teeth needing root canals, their teeth having fractures and having to be extracted, is because they put zirconium. Zirconium is one of the hardest substances that we have. It is almost as hard as diamond. Zirconium is on the periodic table of elements in, guess what, kids, the metal category. It's white. It looks like ceramic. It looks like porcelain. It's not. It is a metal. And everybody gets excited about, I don't want any metal in my mouth, but you put zirconium in there. Technically, scientifically, legally, it's metal. It's in the metal group. It's in there with iron and nickel and titanium. It's all in the same group. It happens to be white, so it fools you a little bit. The other thing is, it is stiff, hard, rigid, and that is absolutely the opposite of what you want on a tooth, because your tooth exhibits what is called the Poisson effect. That's P-O-I-S-S-O-N. P-O-I-S-S-O-N. Yeah, it's French. Poisson. Poisson is a ratio. It is a measure of the Poisson effect. Here's what the Poisson effect is. You experience this every day in your life. For example, there are corks that go in the end of wine bottles. The cork is chosen to go in the end of a wine bottle for a couple of reasons. A, it seals the bottle well, but also its ability to be removed from the bottle. It exhibits a Poisson effect in that the cork does not significantly deform in terms of its fatness as it's pushed into the bottle. It doesn't deform significantly as it's pulled out of the bottle, but it seals well. That's called the Poisson effect. Scientifically, here's what it says. The Poisson effect is a phenomenon that metal, that material, expands in a direction perpendicular to the direction of compression. Now, I'm sure you all have that. But here it is. If you have a cylinder of Play-Doh standing on a table, end up, and you take your hand, a flat surface, and push down on the top of the Play-Doh, as the Play-Doh goes closer to the table, it gets fatter. That's the Poisson effect. It happens if you have ever changed out a radiator hose, and the radiator hose has been slipped over the metal end. You grab the radiator hose to pull it, and it's really hard to pull off of the little metal end of the radiator, because as you pull it, the rubber of the hose exhibits the Poisson effect and gets skinnier. Have you ever put your fingers in Chinese handcuffs? You push them in, the handcuffs expand, it's easier. You pull your fingers apart, the handcuffs contract, it holds your fingers tightly. The harder you pull, the more it gets skinny, the harder it is to pull your fingers out. That is an example of the Poisson effect. Your natural teeth exhibit, Mother Nature wants your teeth to exhibit the Poisson effect. As you put something, a crouton or a potato chip or the hard end of a French fry between your upper and lower teeth, and you grit them together, your teeth on a microscopic scale get shorter and fatter. The dentin of your tooth, the elasticity of the dentin of your tooth, how it's hooked onto the enamel of your tooth, all is this beautifully orchestrated instrument that flexes so that we all don't shatter our teeth. If our teeth didn't exhibit the Poisson effect, our teeth would all shatter. They don't. Zirconium is one of the most rigid materials on the planet, and it exhibits zero Poisson effect. So you put zirconium crowns on teeth. The teeth underneath the zirconium crown wants to, it is its nature to, flex and move and adjust to your biting pressure. The zirconium crown does not. So the tooth above it gets a gigantic hit of pressure and force because it's biting against something that it expects its mate, its friend, to flex and move like it does, and it doesn't. The tooth underneath the zirconium crown is expecting to move and flex, and it can't because it's completely surrounded by and entombed in this zirconium crown, which won't allow it to flex. So these teeth break at the gum line. They snap at the gum line after putting a zirconium crown on it, particularly on the front. There are many other materials in dentistry that are far kinder to the tooth that mimic, duplicate. I do biomimetic dentistry. I take the biology and mimic it with the materials that we select. There are composite materials. There are lithium disilicate materials that have a far greater duplication to the tooth. I tell you, a material that has almost the exact same Poisson ratio as a natural tooth, gold. If you want to put something on your tooth that is probably the closest duplication to the Poisson effect, number one are the new composite materials that we have. Number two is gold. And number three is lithium disilicate. You couldn't get anything further away from the natural characteristics of a tooth than zirconium. And it is the most popular restorative material that's out there right now. Everybody wants, all the dentists are ordering zirconium crowns, and they go on and they glue and they're hard as a rock and they're destroying people's dentition. They're not going to destroy it today. They're not going to destroy it the day after or the week after, but a year, 2 years, 5 years. This is why we're seeing the life expectancy of these teeth underneath these zirconium crowns get shorter rather than longer. We don't have track records of zirconium success at 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 30 years. We have it with gold, for sure. We have it with some of our better and more longstanding composite systems, for sure, but not with zirconium. So to answer the question succinctly, A, should I have a crown done on my tooth? I can just bet you right off the bat, sight unseen, no. And should I use zirconium as the material of choice to restore my tooth? Absolutely. I don't care if I've seen this deal or not. Absolutely, positively not. There's virtually, in my office, I never use zirconium. You'll never find me using zirconium because of the Poisson ratio and the Poisson effect. Now you have the science behind why we make the decisions that we make. So there you have it. Now, up next, we know everybody in the world tells us don't eat red meat. Cows and pigs. Yes, I know. Pork is a red meat. Just get over it. It's just not quite as red as the beef. But why? Why do they tell us not to eat red meat? I'm going to tell you why right after this.
You're listening to the Dr. Shoup Show. Exclusive insider info, audio, and video is online now at ddsradio.com. A doctor that truly cares about having a relationship with you. A doctor who provides one of the most thorough initial dental exams and most thorough initial conversations with you that stands apart in today's industry. Plus, his goal is to do a procedure once, not over and over, to keep billing you. That's the mission of Microscope Dentistry by Shoup. Teeth preservation while saving you cash. We're online at ddsradio.com. You're listening to the Dr. Shoup Show. Here's Dr. Randy Shoup.
I walked a mile in your shoes. Well, thank you very much for joining me here. I really appreciate it. And this is where we are going to explore so many topics and so many reasons for the things that we do and giving you justification and background and science to make really high-quality decisions. You and I both know that for years they've told us reduce the amount of red meat that you eat, whether it be beef or pork, and it really doesn't matter if it's deer or elk or bison, it's all red meat. And so what is there about all of the red meat? It has different amounts of fat in it. It comes from different animals. What is the deal? And I will tell you, the deal is a molecule called N-glycolyl neuraminic acid. I know that's a mouthful. N-glycolyl neuraminic acid. Everybody shorthands it as calling it new 5GC, N-E-U 5GC. New 5GC is a sugar molecule that is entrapped. It's a carbohydrate officially, but carbohydrate translates into sugar. So it's a carbohydrate molecule that is found in red meat. We human beings have lost the ability to produce this sugar molecule, this carbohydrate, in our bodies. There are other mammals, a lot of other animals produce this new 5GC in their muscle tissue, but we humans don't. So we have at some point over time lost the gene that translates and gets transcribed into the production of this particular molecule. Now, it can be metabolized. Our bodies can take this carbohydrate, this new 5GC, and use it in our cells. But there's a problem. The problem is because it is not native to us as human beings. Our bodies read it as a foreign entity, as an invader. And as an invader, so it is considered to be an irritant. So our bodies produce an antigen to fight this molecule. It's simply a carbohydrate, but it produces a massive inflammatory response. Now, here's the trick. When we eat red meat, we don't have the enzymes necessary to release this particular carbohydrate, the new 5GC. But bacteria do. And in our gut, there are certain bacteria that will digest and break down red meat, releasing this new 5GC carbohydrate / sugar molecule. Why? Because the bacteria like it. It's good for them. It gives them energy. They really enjoy this stuff. So they see a great big hamburger coming down through your gut. They go crazy, break this meat down because they want at this new 5GC molecule for them to eat. Your body reads it as something absolutely horrible, kicks up this huge inflammatory response, ergo, you eat red meat, your body gets a big slug of, oh no, I don't like it, and kicks this big inflammatory response. Guess what? There are specific bacteria that really like this new 5GC carbohydrate / sugar molecule. One of them is a bacteria called Bacteroides. Bacteroides is nasty. Bacteroides is a true criminal, you know, mean biker gang, awful bacteria that kills off, that suppresses all of the good commensal bacteria. And so there's actually a remote tribe of people in Tanzania. It's actually should be pronounced Tanzania, but we'll not go there. They have two seasons. They have a wet season and a dry season. During the wet season, they wind up being primarily foragers. They eat honey, they eat berries, they eat plants and so forth because they can't hunt. The animals go away. During the dry season, though, the animals return. They can stand on dry land. And now they hunt and start eating red meat. They took stool samples from this tribe, and during the dry season, when they're eating red meat, their gut bacteria population skyrockets with Bacteroides, and all of the good bacteria get really suppressed down. During the wet season, though, the good bacteria, the Bacteroides starve off. The good bacteria repopulate their gut because they're now eating healthy food. So they can actually track the seasons. What happens when we are in a Western diet and we eat red meat every day? We never have a rainy season or a wet season where we quit eating the red meat. We eat red meat at it's what's for supper. We eat red meat every day. And so the Bacteroides populations in your gut start building up. It suppresses down the commensal, the healthy, the happy bacteria, and we get this chronic inflammatory response coming out of our gut because we eat red meat. You and I have talked about Baylen-Donine and the Baylen-Donine method and this chronic inflammation in our cardiovascular system that leads to heart attacks and strokes and cardiovascular disease. So what happens is you eat red meat, the Bacteroides population in your gut skyrockets, they create all kinds of enzymes and paces that are called sialadinases that break down the meat to release the new 5GC molecule. And then the Bacteroides population drives off all the good bacteria, so your variety of bacteria in your gut goes down. So it sets the stage for you to get C. diff, get indigestion, get poor food digestion, a bunch of things. So that is really the genesis of where we get the inflammatory response, not because of what it's doing to us, but what it does to the bioenvironment of our gut, changing the population, making our entire gut almost one species of bacteria, Bacteroides, which kicks this giant inflammatory response. So there you have it. Now you know. I'm glad I got that off my chest. Now, up next, you get to meet my good friend Janet, a dental researcher and scientist that comes to me because she knows where she gets the good stuff. She'll tell you all about it right after this.
You're listening to the Dr. Shoup Show. Exclusive insider info, audio, and video is online now at DTSradio.com. Lives are changing. Here's a Dr. Shoup story.
Well, thank you very much for being with me on the program, and I am absolutely delighted. One of my good friends is on the line with us. Her name is Janet. She is truly one of the smartest people in the room. She is a researcher, teaches at various dental schools around the country, and kind of home bases here in Indianapolis, and it's been my pleasure and honor to be her dentist for a while. Janet, how are you?
Fine, thank you, Andy. Nice to be with you.
Oh, and by the way, if you haven't picked up, I love her accent. Where's original home for you, Janet? I know, but tell all the listeners.
England. About 60 miles west of London.
that's great. I always like talking to you because I like how it sounds. You actually speak proper English, so congrats. Hey, I want my listeners to understand, and you're just an absolutely perfect source for this, in that if the listener doesn't feel like they're in a dental environment that is giving them all that they should get, I know that you have, you know, about three different criteria that you look at, and happily I measure up on some of these. And so, you know, the first one I think that you had mentioned about was that they need to be in an office where the dentist is excited about doing dentistry. Elaborate on that for me, please.
Well, my job has taken me to different parts of the States, and so I've actually had to make decisions on dentists more frequently than I would like in new locations. And so the first thing that I want to know is that, especially with a general dentist, is they're really up on what's going on and they're very excited about what they do. And usually they will either have just been to a course, they've just bought a new piece of technology which they want to show off. But there are many clues after you shake hands with the dentist that will tell you whether they're up to date or not.
And what sort of things do you key into?
It's always first impressions. What does it look like when you walk through the door? Is it light and welcoming? And then as you're shown into the cubicles, does it look like it's jazzy? You know, usually new technology is very sleek. In dentistry, it's usually beautifully designed. And if you just look around the room, you know, it's how many hand tools do you see? How many machines do you see? How streamlined is that whole office looking? And it should look very sort of almost Italian design, usually, the good ones. Even looking at where the drill is and looking at the kind of drill, you don't have to be an expert, but does it look beautifully designed and does it look new? And then ask the dentist about it, and you'll very quickly find out. Either he or she will say, I bought it 20 years ago, or they'll say, oh, I just bought this, and it's absolutely wonderful because.
Oh, yes, we're very happy to show off our technology. There's no doubt about that. So, well, that's an interesting concept in that somebody should look around an office, and if it looks sleek and modern, that's a really good indicator that their technology, you don't have to know about technology, you just have to understand, does this look sleek, modern, and cool? I love it. Now, the second thing you mentioned to me was that a way to tell how good a dentist is not by looking at the dentist, but looking at the hygienist. Tell me about that.
Yes. Well, I think a hygienist is one of the most important members of the team, because that's the person that the dentist is relying on to check for gum disease and make sure your gums are healthy. So you'll lose teeth either because they get decayed too much and can't be restored, or because there are periodontal disease or gum problems. So having a hygienist who seems to know all about the disease as she talks to you, as she works on you, you can feel sort of steady, firm pressure, and it looks like she's really looking at what's in your mouth and feeling for what's in your mouth. And the good ones are usually a good indicator that this is a thorough office where the dentist is paying attention to detail and is really concerned about the patient's health.
You're exactly right in that, for those of you listening, this is the Dr. Randy Shoup Show, and I have my good friend Janet on here who's telling us about three major criteria she looks for, listens to in an office to make sure that she's in the right dental home. And you're exactly right. The higher, and it's simply economics, the higher the quality of hygienist you get, it's really simple. They demand a larger fee structure, and a dentist has to be able to afford that fee structure, so more successful, more progressive practices will be able to have really good quality hygienists. If a practice isn't very successful, very modern, very progressive, they will get, you know, your run-of-the-mill hygienist who simply doesn't have the knowledge or the expertise or the skill to really give the patient all that they need in terms of modern periodontal care. You have done and do bone research, so there's not too many people that are more knowledgeable about bone and periodontal stuff than you.
Well, that's very flattering. Thank you. I was trying to think of sort of what somebody who's not doesn't feel particularly dentally savvy might look for, and one of the first questions after being introduced to a hygienist is just ask, what was the last course you went to, and when did you go to it? And that will give you a lot of clues about how up-to-date they are, and you can also tell from their tone of voice how enthusiastic they are, and you can kind of tune in. So, whether this is going to be a good experience.
So a patient comes in, it's perfectly good, it's perfectly right, it's not rude to ask a hygienist that you're just meeting, tell me when the last continuing education, when's the last continuing education course you took? If that puts the hygienist off, if it offends her, you probably don't have the right hygienist, but if they're excited and anxious to tell you about their last educational experience, you probably got a pretty good one. That's very fun.
Yes. And I think also that for a patient who's a little bit afraid, especially afraid of perio, just having this sort of chat up front helps a lot. But even asking, do you use hand tools or do you use, what's the latest technology that you use to clean my teeth?
Oh.
We'll also clue you in because there are so many new technologies now that one still has to use hand tools occasionally for the hard bits, but a lot of it can be done much more gently than it used to be done.
Oh, that's great. You're listening to the Dr. Randy Shoup Show, and you have the true pleasure of my good friend Janet on the line with us, and she's telling us kind of the three things that she looks for in a dental office that really separates the really upper echelon, the cream of the crop, from the rest. And the last one is you have a really important key element that you look at in the culture of the office itself. Tell me about that.
Well, I have an interest, as you know, in emotional intelligence. But I think for most patients walking into a dental office, there are some who are very confident and don't worry, but there are many who are very nervous. And you want to have a sense of confidence that your dentist and his team can handle a lot of emotional scenarios, and also that you'll be allowed to say, I'm afraid of this. And so just watching how the team interacts with each other. Do you hear them snipping at each other or do you hear them smiling? Are they laughing with each other? As they walk around the office, are they helping each other out? Is there a nice smooth handoff between the patient who walked out before you and when you walk in? There's many ways to just look and see how do people get along, and that will tell you what the dentist is like as well.
And you're right, it's an emotional intelligence issue, and you don't have to be particularly schooled. It's weird. It's a brain thing, but you feel it in your gut. It's one of those gut instinct things that the sensation of it tells you a lot. So
yes.
that's just absolutely terrific. So when you go to a new place, you want to look at they need to have cool, smooth, modern, sexy looking equipment. That gives you a pretty good idea that they're modern and their equipment's up to date. You want to make sure that the hygienist is enthusiastic and happy to tell you about her most recent continuing education efforts, and then just give yourself a good gut check read on how well the team works together, how happy they are, how much cooperation there is in the office, and all of those things will reflect on the dentist. Oh, Janet, that is absolutely, those are phenomenal tips for the listener out there who wants to find a good dental home. And if your dental home currently, if you don't find these things, you need to go find yourself a new dental home. Janet, I can't thank you enough. I know you have to run off and teach a class. I appreciate your time. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And I hope you enjoyed this. It was fun for me. I hope it was fun for you.
Yes, it's always interesting to be challenged to think about, well, why did you make that decision?
Well, I'm always honored every time you walk in my door. And so thank you very much. I'll let you go.
Okay, thank you, Randy.
Thanks.
Bye,
Janet. Well, there you have it. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I enjoyed bringing it to you. Let this all be a really good lesson for everybody that's listening. All you need to do is go to ddsradio.com, type in your question, type in information, whatever it is you want me to research. I will do my darndest to put you in the queue, do the research, do the background, bring you the why of what we're talking about, let you have more information to make better decisions. I'm happy to do it. It's the way this game is played and how it all turns out the very, very best. The date has been set. Tickets have been purchased. January 15th is when I'm headed to Guatemala City, Guatemala, to look at a school clinic combo that they want to begin doing mission work like I do in Kenya. So Until you and I chat next time, be sure to brush and floss.
Keep on smiling, 'cause when you're smiling,